Hi, I'm Alicia, addict and alcoholic. Oh gosh, I remember the last time I actually came to speak at this alumni speaker event. I don't know if anyone was here, but I ended up having like a panic attack at the podium in front of everyone. Do you remember that, Chris? This was the most embarrassing moment of my life. So when Chris asked me to come back out and tell my story, I was excited because I was like, oh my gosh, he really wants me to come back and speak after having a panic attack in front of everyone. Then I was also mortified. I was like, okay, let's hope we don't have a panic attack again, but the Zoom helps a little bit. So yeah, Alicia, addict, alcoholic. I've been sober, I have 4 years in November. And I'll talk a little bit just about, you know, my past, but not a whole too lot, because I don't think it really matters. You know, my story is a lot like everyone else's, and it may be different. You know, one thing that I've learned from being in the program is that kind of what you experienced in your external life, really, it doesn't have anything to do with you being an addict and alcoholic. You know, I've worked with the homeless, prostitute, heroin addicts and crackheads, you know, and I've worked with women who live in multi-million dollar homes that, you know, have jobs and cars. And regardless of all that, no matter what the external looks like, what I've seen with working with other women is that, you know, when you're an addict and alcoholic, the pain and suffering you feel on the inside, that hopelessness, that desperation is, it's there for any and everyone. It doesn't discriminate at all, and there's no running from it. And I think, you know, I've had that my whole life. I'm a really firm believer that, you know, you can either be born an addict and alcoholic or you can become one, you know, and the book tells us that. And I think for me personally, I was just always an addict and alcoholic. I can always remember, just feeling different, feeling separate, not feeling a part of, but I remember always feeling different personally. And again, I've worked with women now who were completely quote unquote normal their whole life and never really had a problem functioning in life. But for me personally, I remember I always felt like I had a problem functioning, you know, and the easiest way I could describe it was I would look at other people, right? And them seeing their kids, going to the movies, having a hobby, having a, you know, a job, paying their bills, like that was enough for them. Do you get what I'm saying? That was enough to bring them happiness, joy, fulfillment. It never seemed like life was really a struggle for them. I mean, they would have struggles that would come and go, but it wasn't a constant struggle. And the best way that I can explain it is for me, that feeling of fulfillment and happiness and joy, that feeling of life coming easy that I saw other people so easily attain, that for me was always fleeting. You know, it was always hard for me to hold on to that and grasp that. And so when I found drugs and alcohol, it was like, I could finally breathe. I was like, oh, this must be what everyone else feels like all the time. And I immediately fell in love when I was a teenager and I first found it, you know. And then the book talks about, you know, that progressive illness. It's a progressive illness. It talks about incomprehensible demoralization. And I experienced that through my addiction. You know, whether it was from starting off with weed and ended up an IV heroin addict, you know what I mean? And just constantly crossing these lines that I never thought that I would cross, you know, and constantly internally feeling lower and lower and lower to where I couldn't even look myself in the mirror. Do you know what I'm saying? And for some people externally, those lines look like missing their daughter's birthday game. For other people, maybe it looks like selling your body and being homeless, you know? So I don't think the external, how far you go down really matters too much, but internally it's that you feel broken, right? You feel helpless. And I remember for a really long time, I was at this point where it was like the drugs and the alcohol stopped working. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'd be driving to the dope man's house to go pick up dope, knowing I wasn't going to get any relief from it, knowing it wasn't going to change anything for me, knowing like right after I got high, I was going to go back to being miserable. I was going to go back to hating myself, and I was going to go back to feeling like I was living an empty life, but I couldn't stop, you know, and I could like see all the consequences that getting high was having on my life. I could see how miserable it was making me. I could see that it was stopping me from being the person I wanted to be. I was saying it was separating me from my family. And I still couldn't quit. You know, I was chasing a high that was never going to come. I was chasing a sense of relief that I was never really going to have, you know, and I never understood that. I didn't understand why I just couldn't quit. You know, I went in and out of treatment for a few times. And I thought for a long time, like, oh, just don't do dope, steal things, don't catch any charges, right? Get a job, pay your rent, be a contributing member to society, and you're going to be good. You'll be normal. And I would try that in and out, in and out, in and out, and it never worked. Because even when the times I could stop and I could stay dry for a couple months and I could stop myself from getting high internally, I was fucking miserable. I was bored. I was lonely. I was empty. And I was like, this is horrible. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand this. Like, what's the point of even being sober if I'm going to feel this way being sober? I may as well get high. Right. No one had explained to me yet. I had never been through the 12 steps. No one explained to me that drugs and alcohol weren't my problem. They were my solution. The whole time I thought drugs and alcohol were my problem. I thought you just take the dope away from me. I get a job. I don't steal. I, you know, pay some rent and I'll be good. And I couldn't understand why that wasn't working, you know? And I remember I went to a handful of meetings. This is when I was living in Dallas, because I've moved cities, I've moved states. I've started over where I didn't know anyone, you know, just constantly trying to escape, trying to get well. But when I was living in Dallas, I remember the first time I went to a handful of meetings because I was like, the therapy ain't working. The Suboxone ain't working. The Vivitrol ain't working. The job ain't working. Nothing's working. I still feel like shit every day. And I can't figure out how all these normal people, how life just comes so easy for them. And I went to a handful of meetings and I didn't know what the hell they were freaking talking about. You know what I mean? Like, they were talking about four step and sponsor and spiritual malady. And I was just like, man, these people, this is a fucking cult. You know what I mean? Like, this is strange. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll try to watch my cursing. I forget there's kids, my bad. But I just remember being like very, I didn't know what was going on and I was so miserable. You know what I mean? I was so miserable. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I didn't want anyone to talk to me. I had no idea what they were talking about. I went to a couple meetings and I was like, man, I don't know how this is going to make me feel any better or take away this obsession to want to get loaded, you know? And that's where, looking back on it now, that's why I understand how important the fellowship is. That's why I understand how important meetings like this are and good sponsorship is, you know, because when I went to those meetings, not one person came up and approached me. You know what I mean? Not one person came up and asked for my phone number, gave me their number. Not one person came and said, hey, man, it looks like you're struggling. Let me sit down and kind of explain to you what this program's about. Or do you want to talk? You know, and I'm really grateful for good sponsorship and for the program that Austin has, because it's taught me to remember that. So when I go to meetings and I can see a newcomer struggling or some girl that looks miserable or doesn't, and she has no idea. You know, you can just tell she's looking flabbergasted and she doesn't, you say four step and she's like, what the heck? You know, it lets me know to go approach her. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people don't understand what the solution is. A lot of people don't even understand what they're suffering from. They just know that they're miserable and they can't keep a bottle from their lip or a needle from their arm or whatever it is. And they don't know how to quit, but they have no idea what they're up against or what the solution is to that. And so I'm really grateful that, the recovery in Austin taught me that. So I know whenever I go to meetings, it's my responsibility to approach those people and try to help them out, you know? So, but anyways, I wound up in Austin through a series of events. That's way too long to explain and would probably bore you guys to death. But it was the first place I went to that broke down the 12 steps to me, you know? And they explained to me, this disease that I had. You know, they explained to me this spiritual malady I have, right? Restless, irritable, discontent, you know, just constantly being unhappy, constantly feeling empty, just miserable. And I was like, oh yeah, yeah. I felt like that for years. Check, got it. You know? And they explained to me this mind that, man, it's going to convince you to get high at all costs. And it doesn't matter how bad you want to quit. And it doesn't matter what consequences you've gone through. And it doesn't matter, it just doesn't matter what you want. You're going to continue to get high. And what I found really interesting is they explained to me too, is like in the big book, when it talks about, you know, and when it's talking about the cycle, it says you're chasing this sense of ease and comfort you're going to get by taking a few drinks. What they explained to me is that sense that they're talking about is you're chasing either a feeling or a perception of the feeling. And I really got down with that, right? Because for the last couple of years when I was getting loaded, it was like the dope never worked anymore. I don't know if you guys got to that point or what. I'm assuming if you found yourself here, you did. The dope stopped working. I was forever chasing the perception of a feeling, the relief I thought I was going to come. It never came constantly, right? And they explained to me that once I put this substance in my system, I can't stop. I keep going and going and going, and there's no control in it, you know, and how I'm stuck in that cycle and it's repeated over and over again, regardless of how bad I want to quit. And I really related to that, you know, because I could remember going to pick up and I'd be crying. I'd be just crying and crying and crying just all by myself in my car alone, being dramatic too. I'd play like some sad music, you know what I mean, to make myself even more sad. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? No, just me. But, you know, yeah, right. You're just dramatic. You're like, let me put on some sad music so I can be even more sad and really feel this sadness, you know? So funny to think about how attention seeking I was, but anyways, but I just remember being in the car driving to go pick up. Cause I would just be crying because I knew, you know what I'm saying? Like I knew it wasn't going to give me anything. It wasn't going to give me any relief and it wasn't going to change anything. I'd be lucky if I got high for, you know, a couple minutes long enough to just black out and not feel nothing. And then 10, 15 minutes would pass and boom, I'd be right back to reality, right back stuck to myself. And so, and I'd be crying as I was getting high because I wanted to change. I wanted to change. I didn't want to, you know, I don't think any of us grow up and say at 5 years old, oh, I want to be a heroin addict, crackhead, alcoholic, you know, can't hold down it. No one says that, you know, and it's damn sure not who I wanted to be. Like I wanted to have a family and have people that loved me and be someone that they could be proud of, be someone I could be proud of, look myself in the mirror. And that just never seemed, it never seemed obtainable to me at all. And I couldn't figure out how to get out of it. Like when the book talks about, you know, being at that point to where you can't imagine life with it and you can't imagine life without it. Like that was me. I couldn't imagine my life continuing to go on the way that I was living. And I couldn't imagine giving it up because I was just scared to death of having to feel, having to go through a day and feel. That was my biggest fear. Every night on my nightlies for the first, I don't even know how many months of sobriety, it was like, what was your fear? I was like feeling my feelings. Like I was constantly trying to escape them. And so when I came to Austin, I was blessed enough to be able to go to a treatment center again. And they explained all that to me and how that was just alcoholism, addiction, and how drugs and alcohol really weren't my problem. You know, it clicked for me. And they explained how when you take drugs and alcohol away from me, I get worse. And for a long time, I was confused on that because I was like, well, I don't think I get worse. Like, I don't catch charges. I can hold down a job. Like, I'm not going to jail. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't. But they explained to me, like, internally, you get worse. And I really understood that because the times I would try to get sober, you take drugs and alcohol away. It's horrible. It's miserable. You got to actually sit with yourself 24/7. You can't escape your feelings. You can't numb out. There's no, I mean, because that's all we're doing. We're getting high, right? So we're trying to escape the malady. We're trying to numb. We're trying to run from ourselves. And so when you take those drugs and alcohol away, it's like, no, you got to sit with everything you were just running from for however many years or months, you know? And I really understood that because every time I tried to get sober, it was miserable because I was never treating the alcoholism. I didn't know what the solution was, you know? And so they explained to me, this whole step two thing, how you need to find something that you're willing to believe in something bigger than yourself, even if you're not sure what it is. And, you know, that really wasn't too hard for me. Step two wasn't really too hard because I was so miserable from my first step. I was like, whatever, you want me to try to say, God, you want me to try to pray? Like, I'll do it. I don't think it's going to work. I don't think it's really there. You know what I mean? But I'll try it, you know, because I'd gotten to a point too, where from the pain I felt in my step one, from that misery, it really just brought me to my knees in a way to where I said, you know what, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. You tell me to jump, I'm going to say how high. You tell me to pray, I'm going to pray. You tell me to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm not going to like it. I may complain about it and cry about it and throw a little temper tantrum and have a little attitude about it, you know, but I'm going to do it because I was also very, very, very convinced that my way didn't work. You know, this last time I got sober, I was just in a point where I just remember I broke down and I was like, I don't know what to do. Every time I try to get sober, it doesn't work. Every time I try to do it my way, it's not working. And I don't want to feel this way anymore. And I didn't necessarily want to get sober either, right? But I wanted to stop feeling miserable every day. I wanted to escape the pain that I was feeling. And heroin used to do that for me and it no longer was. And so I had to figure out a new way. How can I get rid of this pain? You know, and so they told me, hey, this is going to take away your pain. This is going to change your life. This is going to make you feel better. And I didn't really believe it, you know, at all. I didn't think it was going to work for me. I didn't want to do it, you know, but I was just clear of like, what other option do I have? Because I understood if I go back to getting high, I know what that lifestyle holds for me. I had been doing it for a little bit at that point. So I knew exactly what it looked like, exactly what it felt like, and exactly what my life would entail. And I didn't want that anymore. It was too miserable at that point. So I was ready to do whatever they told me to do. even if I didn't want to, even if I thought it was stupid, even if I didn't feel like it, if it meant that I could escape that pain, I was going to try it. And so when they told me about step two, it's not necessarily that I believed. It's not that I wanted to believe. Wasn't any of that. It was just I was willing to, because I was so miserable. I was so miserable. I was willing to try to connect with something. I put all the prejudice I had about the God I was raised with to the side. And I said, okay, I'm going to give this a shot. You know, I was raised in Oklahoma, which don't hold it against me. I don't know if any of y'all ever been to Oklahoma, but it's, how can I put this? It's very set back in the times, if you will, right? Bible state. And so I wasn't necessarily a fan of the beliefs that I was raised with, but I was willing to put all that prejudice to the side if it meant that maybe you might be able to find some relief, you know? And I kind of just put all my eggs in this basket and prayed like hell that it was going to work, because I didn't really have any options that I could see anymore. Treatment centers didn't work. Suboxone didn't work. Vivitrol didn't work. Just drinking didn't work. Just smoking weed didn't work, right? Only getting high 3 days out of the day, out of the week didn't work. I mean, all these little things I would try to do to make it work. It just was really clear that it didn't. You know, and in my step three, they sat down and they explained to me how I'm selfish and self-centered, right? Surprise, surprise. That, again, was not hard for me to accept. I had been causing damage for many years at this point, and so it wasn't too hard for me to grasp that concept. But they told me that I'm basically just consumed with thinking of myself all the time. You know, and because I'm consumed with thinking of myself all the time, it drives me. It really drives me in life. And it really blinds me from seeing what the truth is, you know, and I try to manage every little thing in my life because I think it's going to make me happy. I think that if life just looked like this, I'd be happy. If my boyfriend just treated me like this, I'd be happy. If, you know, if I just had the money, if I just had the job, you know, whatever, I'd be happy. And so I spend up all this time and energy trying to control and manage those things. And really what I end up doing is creating a bunch of chaos and making my life look like a shit show, more or less, you know. And I didn't really understand step three when they first explained it to me. I think just now, coming up on 4 years of sobriety, I'm really starting to understand it. So I don't know if I'm just a slow learner or if that's usual, but that's kind of how I feel about it now. But I remember when I first got sober, step three was just kind of like, hey, you know, you're selfish, you're self-centered. You're constantly consumed with yourself. You're constantly trying to play God by controlling things in your life. And so you got to make a decision to quit playing God. And for me, that looks like just throwing myself into the rest of the work, you know, and I did that. I did that. And you know, I had them explain step four to me too, going on this inventory process. They made it really, really clear to me that the inventory process wasn't to complain about all the people that hurt me. It wasn't to be negative and be a victim and sit in my self-pity and look at how life was unfair. You know, they made it super clear that I have a spiritual malady and I have a mental obsession, and those things will continue to cause me to get loaded. And so the, I don't want to say the cure, the treatment for that, right? The way I become recovered is to get connected to God, to a power greater than myself. And if the only way I'm going to get connected to a power greater is to remove the things in me that are disconnecting me, to remove the things in me that are having me blocked off, that are causing my spiritual malady, you know. In the fourth step, it talks about that our third step decision, it's vital and crucial, but it's not going to have a permanent effect unless you follow it at once by an effort to get rid of this stuff in you that's blocking you off. It talks about getting down to causes and conditions. And they explained that to me in the fourth step, that they were like, hey, you got to get down to what's causing you to get blocked off from God. Right? That's going to lead to your condition of alcoholism. That's going to lead to your condition of the spiritual malady. You got to figure out what keeps coming up within you, you know? And so, and that, I think I've just really, really, really been starting to understand this last year of my sobriety, using that inventory process, really not to blame. Because a lot of times I try to still sell my story. I don't know if any of you guys have ever 10-stepped or done inventory. And it's like, you're still trying to sell your story for why you're right and they're wrong and they've harmed you, and you know. And it's not even about that. It's about being free of all that stuff that comes up within you, right? It's like when I can do the piece of inventory over the abusive ex-boyfriend who cheated on me and treated me like crap. It's not about looking at if I was right or wrong for staying. It's not about looking at if he, you know, was right or wrong for how he showed up. It's about looking at, man, why am I disconnected? This belief that I have that I deserve to be treated that way. right? Or this fear that I'm not good enough. It's all that stuff that comes off, that comes up within me, that has me disconnected from God, right? And that fourth step is there to bring me some awareness and to help lead me to seeing what's disconnecting me, you know? And they explained in that fifth step, the whole purpose of the fifth step is to gain some awareness, to be able to talk to God and someone else about your life, about everything, you know, holding nothing back, which was really, really scary for me. I'm a pretty, I'm sure just like most of y'all, a pretty private person, right? We don't want people seeing the ugly in us. We don't want people seeing our, and I don't know if you guys are like me, but I was psychotic, right? Certified psychopath. And so a lot of the things that were on my fourth step, man, I was embarrassed about. I don't want to admit to any of that stuff. You know what I mean? But they just said, man, if you're clear on your step one and you don't want to go back to living that way and you want to live a different way of life, you better do it. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to just rip the bandaid off. I'm going to do it. Let's hope they don't call the police on me or think, you know, the psych ward. And I just jumped on in. And one thing I really started to understand the longer I stayed sober too is like, in that fourth and fifth step, you know, it doesn't take away all your problems. Like I hear a lot of people like, oh, I did my fifth step. I'm not resentful anymore. I feel sentenced. And that's great, you know, but it's been my experience. Like I can do a fifth step and sometimes I feel great afterwards. Like I'm floating. I feel super connected, super close to God. Sometimes I do a fifth step. I feel even worse because I'm like, oh, wow, that was super embarrassing. I can't believe I showed up like that. But really how I feel coming out of a fifth step doesn't matter. You know, and like just doing a fist up for me, it didn't just take away all of my resentment. Sometimes it did. Sometimes it didn't. You know, it doesn't just take away all of my defects. I'm not therefore cured because I did a fist up, right? It's like the fist up gave me awareness for how I was showing up, how I was blocked off, why I was blocked off, right? My defects. It gave me an opportunity to have humility, to look at with clarity how I show up, why I show up like that and how it disconnects me from God. You know what I'm saying? And then in 6 and 7, they explained to me how when I get all of that awareness, I can humbly take it to God and I can say, you know what, God, please remove this fear from me of not being good enough. Please remove this defect of being psychotic, right? And I get a really look at how can I align myself, how I want to show up with how I think God would have me show up. You know what I mean? Like, let's say with that boyfriend, I'm doing that piece of inventory and God, I had so many pieces of inventory like this, where it's like, it's crazy. I just pop about houses and do this, this and that and be all sorts of crazy. And I would come to see in the fifth step that, hey, you're showing up like that. It's not about him. It's about you. You believe you're not good enough. You believe that no one's going to love you. You believe you're inadequate, right? So this is how you're driven by all that. This is how you show up. And so then in 6 and 7, I get to, and after in my hour of meditation, I really look at, man, God, please remove all of that from me and help me not be driven by those fears and those beliefs. Show me who you would have me be in that. And I get to fundamentally change how I show up because that fear isn't going to go away just because I read a piece of paper. That would be insane, right? That'd be like magic to think, oh, you're going to read a piece of paper and those fears, those defects are all going to disappear. So in my experience, most of the time, they don't work like that. But what it does do is it gives me awareness so that in my next relationship, like currently, when I see that stuff pop up, I don't have to act the same way. I can go to God. I have some awareness. I'm connected now. I can be a woman of recovery versus the woman I was whenever I first came in. That was so, so disconnected and so broken, you know? And so after, oh, it's a cute little baby. Sorry, he's adorable. And so after, you know, in that fifth step too, a big thing I realized is I gained a lot of awareness, man, a lot of awareness for how I've harmed people. And like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, you know, I always knew I harmed people because I showed up as a scumbag. You know what I mean? I stole from people. I did horrible things to people. I treated people horribly. I didn't care about anyone else. I only cared about my bottom line and my bottom dollar. You know what I mean? But post fifth step, there was just like, there was a whole level of understanding of like sincerity, of like really understanding what I put people through and how I affected them. You know what I mean? It just kind of like changed my spirit. And in 8 and 9, I really get the opportunity to go out and to try to take responsibility for those things and make them right. And that's been such an empowering step for me. You know, it's like, I have the ability now that I'm connected. Now that I've done work, I can go sit across from someone, look them in the eye and truly take responsibility for the harm I caused them, for how I showed up, you know, and I don't have to run from it and I don't have to be ashamed of it. And that's so empowering for someone like me who, God, I wouldn't take responsibility for a damn thing when I was using, you know, nor would I acknowledge any of my shortcomings. And I get to go for them like a changed woman, truly feeling sorry for my wrongs and to take responsibility for that. And sure, there are times where there have been amends where I haven't wanted to make them, right? Where I'm like, oh, it doesn't matter how much inventory I did. I still was like, oh, I hate them, you know, and F them and look at everything they did to me versus what I did to them. And I didn't want to make amends, but through good sponsorship in the program, I got told, you know, like, suck it up. You know, you still got to go make the amends. And I'll tell y'all this, like, those are the most like rewarding amends I've ever made. And the amends that I've really just gotten so emotional with. I remember like my family's amends, like there was a lot of abuse and horrible stuff that went on when I was growing up. And so after doing inventory, I was like, you want me to go make amends to these people? You know what I mean? Like, yes, I was messed up due to my addiction, but they look at what they did even since I was a child, right? How dare I, like, why would I ever go back and make amends to these people? And, you know, a sponsor just explained to me like, hey, this process is about making right the harm that you've caused. Taking responsibility for how you've impacted and showed up in people's lives, you know, and it's not about them making amends or taking responsibility. It's about you cleaning up your side of the street. You know what I mean? And I specifically remember going back to Oklahoma to make amends to my family. And I mean, it's the only amends I've just broke down sobbing in. And it was also the most freeing amends. You know, I did a bunch of inventory. I did a bunch of 10 steps. I did a bunch of work around it, but I can never find it in my heart to truly like let go of that pain, to let go of that resentment until I made amends. You know what I mean? And then it was like, once I made amends, I really don't even know how to explain it, but it was just such a freeing experience. Like I was free of all that resentment from that point forward. It didn't bind me anymore. It didn't hold me down. I wasn't driven by it. And I was just able to like let it be. And they didn't make an amends back to me. And that's fine. I didn't need it. It wasn't about that. You know what I mean? It wasn't about that at all. It's about cleaning up my side of the street and my spiritual demonstration. And it was about me being close to God and trying to show up as the woman I thought God would have me be. You know, and the amends, it says from this point forward, our real service is to be of maximum people to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And so that's what it was about for me. I was trying to be of maximum service to my family, to God. And it was just the most freeing experience. So if you guys have any amends where it's like, you really, really don't want to make it, like, just suck it up, right? So you put the bit in your teeth, get over it and go and make it. And it really is so much more freeing. It's a lot harder. It's as hard as you make it, but it's so much more freeing to go out and to make those amends than anything else, you know? And they explained to me too, like with the 10 step, that I can gain all of this awareness. I can gain all of this awareness and all this freedom from a fifth step. And I'll go right back to sleep to it. All those fears I became aware of, all of those defects, those belief systems, those stage characters, everything I start to see about myself, all the ways I start to see that I'm disconnected from God, I'll go right back to sleep to. If I'm not constantly trying to look at how I'm showing up, at how I get disconnected. You know, and they showed me the proper way to 10 step too, thank God. Because when I first started, I thought it was just, let me vent and talk crap about whoever pissed me off. You know, they had to explain to me, no, Alicia, you're looking at, just like in the 4 step, where are you disconnected? Where are you driven? Are you showing up in self? How are you causing harm? You know what I mean? So that then when I become aware of it, I can go and make amends if I need to. Right, clean up whatever harm I cause, but ultimately so I can be connected to God, because what this whole program is about, it's about being connected to God, being connected to a higher power, because that is, at the end of the day, that's what's going to save your ass. That's what's going to take away your obsession. And I'm really grateful for the people that constantly remind me that, of like, this program, what you're doing, it has nothing to do with other people. It has to do with them, about your own connection with God. And you got to do what you got to do to find that if you want to stay sober. Because I can't afford to be resentful. I can't afford to just sit in resentment every day or fear or any of that stuff. Because what happens is I get so discontent and so miserable and so unhappy with life. It's only a short time before my mind tells me, oh, well, you know what will make this feel better, right? You know, it will get rid of this feeling. And I know that because I just experienced it for years. One quick thing too, I wanted to share about the fifth step process is, you know, like I said, some people have really enlightening moments in their fifth step. They feel like they're walking on water and super connected and super close to God. Some people, like my first fifth step, I remember I really didn't feel one way or the other. I was like, this is annoying. My voice hurts. I'm really tired and I have a headache from talking for 3 hours, you know? And some people leave and they feel worse. They're like, oh my gosh, I feel so bad about myself. None of those are right and none of those are wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're going in there and your whole goal is to be thorough and honest and to try to get unblocked and connected to something, you're going to have the experience you need to have. And one thing that like I've never understood too, and maybe this is controversial for me to say, but it's like, man, if you're post fifth step and like, you're not excited about making your amends, you're not excited about sponsoring people. It's like, dude, there's something, you missed something, right? Cause like, even though I didn't feel super enlightened and all of my resentments weren't removed or like whatever from my first fifth step, the one thing that did happen was like, I swear to y'all, ever since my first fifth step almost 4 years ago, I've never had the obsession to get high again. I've never wanted to get loaded again. I've had fleeting thoughts, you know what I mean? Where like I'm out on the river, I'm outside, I'm like, oh man, like being drunk right now would be so fun, or ooh, I bet that looks so good. But like the actual obsession of like, no, I can go out and I can do it this way, and this is how I can get away with it, and they'll never know. And if I just do a little bit, and y'all know exactly what I'm talking about, right? Like that actual obsession to truly go out and get loaded has never come back. And that for me is a miracle. Like I was someone that couldn't stay sober for more than, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 days by myself. And the fact that like the obsession to get high has never come back. And like also the fact that I can empty out syringes full of drugs. I can throw away booze. I can throw away, you know, whatever. And it doesn't even cross my mind like that. Maybe a fleeting thought, but it's like, it has no power over me. Like that's a promise I never even thought was like obtainable. I didn't even think, I couldn't even imagine that being a possibility for me. You know what I mean? Like I never thought I was, I'd at least smoke weed or drink or whatever. I never thought not only would I not want to do those things, but I would be happy without them. You know, and so it's like post fifth step, if you know what I'm saying, you're not excited to go make amends, you're not excited to get out there and sponsor. I mean, yeah, fear and stuff is normal, but it's like if fundamentally something doesn't start to change, man, I don't know, that just wasn't my experience. I've seen a lot of people do the work, and it's like at some point, man, if you don't have some gratitude and you're not excited about helping a newcomer, is sharing a message, sponsoring someone, making amends, like, you got to look at like, man, has my spirit really changed? Am I really experiencing these problems? I fundamentally believe if you're rooted in this work, you're really trying to seek God, you're really trying to, you know, do what's outlined, you're going to have an experience where you feel fulfilled and excited, and you're going to have like a new purpose in life. And it's going to be, it's better than dope. I used to hate it whenever the person taking me through the work would say that, because I'd always be like, oh, you just didn't do good dope then, you know, or you didn't do it the way I did, but it's true. But I couldn't understand when she was saying it, because I'd never experienced anything better than dope. You know what I mean? But I promise you that it's accurate. It's accurate. This way of life and the promises and the experience you get from it, man, it's so freeing, and it's the best thing I've ever had. And it's the only reason I'm sober. It's the only sufficient solution I found. I'm sure just like a lot of you guys are a lot like me, if not all, you know what I mean? Like you like getting high, you like getting loaded. The only reason any of us are still sober is because we found a sufficient solution, a sufficient replacement, you know? And like, that's such a beautiful thing. So when you really, really think about it, that you can be sober and you can be happy and you can be free if you just get out of your own way, do the work as outlined in the book, don't be stubborn, follow some directions, put your ego to the side, do shit that you don't want to do. I made it so complicated when I first got sober. I don't want to do this. And I don't, you know what I mean? Like so complicated, so much more complicated and so much more harder than it needed to be. They were like, Alicia, who cares what you want? Did you want to be homeless? Did you want to not have enough money to eat McDonald's? Did you want to, you know what I mean? No, you still did it for the dope. You got to do the same thing for your sobriety. I don't care if you want to do a nightly, if you want to meditate, if you want to, like, who cares what you want? You know, at the end of the day, are you willing? Are you willing to change? You want to go back to living that life? No, then be quiet and do what's in front of you. And oh, I used to get so mad, but I'm so thankful that they put it to me like that, because it was very true. Like my disease never cared about what I wanted, and I never cared about what I had to do in order to get money or dough. You know, so I had to take that same willingness, that same desperation, and apply it to sobriety. What I wanted to do didn't really matter. you know, I just had to do what was in front of me. And I the only reason I was willing to do that was, like I said, is because I really believed that my way, it didn't work. My experience showed me that. I was also really thankful for the women that took me through the work, because they always pushed me back to looking at my experience. Well, Alicia, what does your experience show you? Does your experience show you that this works for you? Right? What is your, what does this lead you to? What does your experience show this lead you to? And I'd be like, oh, well, shit, you're right. You know? Sorry, I kind of went off on a tangent, but anyways. And so, and then they showed me, you know, 11 and 12, the importance of nightly some meditation, constantly really trying to practice reflecting, really looking at how I get disconnected from God so that I can try to remove that. I can ask God to remove it. I can change how I show up. You know, and the importance of carrying this message to other people. That is one of the highlights of my life now, you know, is being able to sit knee to knee from another woman and try to help take her through the work. And that's such a blessing, because I remember when I came in, I couldn't look anyone in the eye. I wouldn't let anyone touch me. I wouldn't give hugs. You know, people would try to give me the little chips at the meetings, and I'd be like, don't touch me. Just give me the chip, you know? And so to be able to sit across from another woman and understand what she's going through and truly be able to try to help her and use my experience and try to explain to her the program that was explained to me, it's the most freeing thing. You know, it really, really is. And I wouldn't change it for the world. What time am I supposed to stop, Chris? 7:20? Yeah, I guess I'll wrap it up with this. It's like, and you, what I've learned in these past 4 years is, man, life is such a journey and it's such a trip. You know what I mean? And you're going to go through pain and you're going to go through hard times and you're going to go through challenges. You know, shit's not all rainbows and butterflies just because you're recovered, just because you work a program and go to AA or, you know, CA or whatever your thing is. It's not, you know, but the gift and the beauty of it is like you can stay sober through it all. You know what I mean? And you can always get connected if you're willing to do the work. And when you can get connected, man, it doesn't matter what you go through. You know, you're safe, you're protected, you're taken care of. And one of the biggest beauties of it all is you don't want to get high anymore. You know, and you don't have to fight it. It's not like you force yourself to. It's just lifted from you. You know, you get to be the person that you always wanted to be. You get to live the life that you always wanted to live. And it just comes so naturally. And it's so beautiful if you do the work. Right? If you do what's in front of you, if you follow suggestion and direction, you know, and I'm really thankful for meetings like these. I'm really thankful for the opportunity to speak. Chris, thank you for asking me, even though last time we had some technical difficulties. But, you know, and that's just another miracle too. It's like, it still amazes me. Someone asked me to speak at a meeting. Like that's, people used to follow me around in gas stations when I went because they were scared I was going to steal the food and the drinks. You know what I mean? And it's like, someone's asking me to come and speak and talk about my life and how I got better. It's a beautiful gift, you know, that I don't want any of you guys to miss. And I'm really grateful that I didn't miss it. And that, yeah, I'm grateful for the fellowship that they sat down and they explained this thing to me and the importance of carrying that message to the newcomer. Because if they wouldn't have, I probably wouldn't be here. Or I'd be in prison or out there living some meaningless life, you know? So anyways, I don't know. I feel like I've rambled for about 40 or 50 minutes, but I hope you got something from my talk. And thanks again, Chris, for asking me to come back out.
I said, great share.
Yes. Thank you so much. That was awesome.
Yes, yeah. It was.